We're in a section in our church at the moment where we're looking at the ninth discipleship point. Just one more to go after that, and that's knowing the Word of God. But at the moment, we've been looking at serving the poor and different passages, particularly from the Old Testament. And last week was Micah, if you remember. And today, it's Isaiah 58, which is a chapter that we mention quite a lot as a church. I'm not going to read all of it. I'm just going to read verses 6 through to 12, because that's really the meat of what the Lord is asking of us. The first five verses talk about fasting, and I'll explain a word about that in a moment or two, but we begin at verse 6. Is not this the kind of fasting I have chosen? To loose the chains of injustice and untie the cords of the yoke, to set the oppressed free and break every yoke. Is it not to share your food with the hungry and to provide the poor wanderer with shelter? When you see the naked, to clothe him and not to turn away from your own flesh and blood. Then your light will break forth like the dawn and your healing will quickly appear. Then your righteousness will go before you and the glory of the Lord will be your rear guard. Then you will call and the Lord will answer. You will cry for help and he will say, here I am. If you do away with the yoke of oppression, with the pointing finger and malicious talk, and if you spend yourselves on behalf of the hungry and satisfy the needs of the oppressed, then your light will rise in the darkness and your night will become like the noonday. The Lord will guide you always. He will satisfy your needs in a sun-scorched land and will strengthen your frame. You'll be like a well-watered garden, like a spring whose waters never fail. Your people will rebuild the ancient ruins and will raise up the age-old foundations. You'll be called repairer of broken walls, restorer of streets with dwellings. Now, those six verses, there's just too much to talk about. So I'm doing three and a bit this morning and the rest tonight at 7:30. But the first half ends with God's promises, and then there's a bit more instruction, and then there's some more promises from God. So it breaks nicely into two parts. And these are really practical instructions of what Isaiah calls the true fast. Now, in the first five verses, he was talking about good and bad fasting. He wasn't saying that they shouldn't be fasting. He was just saying that their fasting wasn't the right way to do it, because they were mimicking, that's a difficult one for me to say, they were trying to be like the nations around them, because the nations around them, when they fasted to their different gods, they thought just by the action of fasting, they could twist the arm of their gods to do what they wanted them to do. And God was trying to say, fasting is not like that. Fasting is not a hunger strike. And if we hunger strike, therefore God will do these different things for us. So clearly fasting is important in God's purposes, but the action in and of itself is not the point. Relationship with God is at its heart, and the things that we do alongside the fasting are of supreme importance. So when God talks about the true fast, he's not saying don't fast, he's just saying get all the ingredients right. So here's the question: what has currency in heaven? What is it that moves the heart of God and leads him to pour out the greatest blessing upon us? It seems that as far as God is concerned, caring for the needy is a very high priority. For those who only want to practice private religion and not involve themselves with needy people, we are missing the spiritual boat. These verses today explain to us who, in fact, God sees as the needy. Now, they fall into two categories. There's what we call societal issues and then individuals' needs. Issues of justice and meeting individual needs. And the first four that we're going to look at are societal. They're things that affect lots of people in our country. And then I want to say how they might be tackled. So there are four things here. They're coming up on the screen. I'll say a word about what they mean and then some ways that we can tackle them. To loose the chains of injustice. This is working hard to abolish social structures or the actions of wrongdoers who harm or destroy or diminish the liberty of others. The cords of the yoke. This means working against people or groups where other people are treated like animals. We've heard stories even in our own country of children who are treated even worse than animals. And then to set the oppressed free. Who are the oppressed? Those who are broken by life. Doesn't it break your heart when you see the statistics, perhaps of what's been happening in a deprived area for generations, and money has been thrown at it, but it's still the same as ever it was? The government don't have any answers to some of these problems. And then to break every yoke. Now, this is quite a statement. To break every yoke. Whatever the area, if it's inhumanity, injustice, or inequality, God is in the breaking of the yoke business. These are huge things. We're overwhelmed by society's issues. So what can be done? I want to talk first of all about political involvement. What is immediately obvious is that all of these things can only be cured by political action. Some politicians tell the church to keep their nose out of politics and go and hide back in the ghetto of the church again. But unfortunately, they don't realise what offends God. We can look back at the tireless work of William Wilberforce in his abolition of slavery. We can, over the last couple of centuries, see ways in which social deprivation has been tackled and cured sometimes. We can thank God for Steve Chalk and what he's been doing, and for our own Antoinette Daniels, who's working with the trafficking in the sex trade. All these things should be applauded. What the churches are doing alongside homeless people in different parts, likewise, is making its contribution. Some of us here write to our local MP or our councillors, or we make appointments to go and see them. We can learn from such people and be involved in the same sort of activity. So in all of these ways, there is political involvement. And in the main, the church doesn't do very well at this. Maybe there's somebody sitting here this morning and the Lord is calling you further into politics. That's a possibility. And maybe you're the man or the woman that's going to make some real strides for him. But then what about personal involvement? It's sadly true that even though the governments have power and authority and millions at their disposal, what they actually achieve is very little. But the amazing truth is that God has put energy and supernatural power into the church, which means that the church can do more than the government can do at times. I was telling a story, I think, at the 6 o'clock service some time ago. And it was a lady who was a retired Baptist minister. And she'd retired to this housing estate, a deprived housing estate in Bristol. And like most estates, they also had their antisocial behaviour. Lots of young people running riot most of the nights. And so she decided that she would go and sit with these young people where they gathered on the estate, and that she would make them flapjack. Now, over a period of time, the police took notice, social services took notice, because that woman with her flapjack sitting in her deck chair did more good than what had been thrown at that estate for quite some time. Now, why is that the case? Because God has put energy into the church that the church can do through the power of the Spirit and one individual in that case, more than a great army of people operating out of their own human resources. Somebody gave me a CD which deeply spoke to me some months ago, and they recently gave me the book of the same story. I'm just wading through that now. And it was a story of a conservative evangelical, that means somebody who believes the Bible and wants to be faithful to how it wants us to live. And one of his friends said to him, Christian friends said to him, that they were gay. He was horrified. And the next month, another Christian friend of his said that they were gay. He was horrified and wanted initially nothing to do with them. Then God sort of began to speak to his heart, continued to speak to his heart. He's still a Bible-believing Christian. He's heterosexual. But he's had a word from God, and so now he has moved into the section of Chicago that is called Boys Town. It's just full of homosexuals. And he went there initially to listen. He's doing a remarkable ministry. Just one person. Now it's grown to more people. He had a word from God. The word from God was, go and love people. Go and listen. Take Jesus. Don't go in a condemning attitude. Stand for what you believe. But don't go in a condemning attitude. My prayer is that there'll be people in our church over the next few years. There have been already. But more so than you'll just get a word. And you'll just think, God wants me to do this. The whole church doesn't have to do it. It might be that there's a handful of you that eventually catch the same sort of vision together. And then you go and find yourself and you plant yourself in a place of darkness so that you might be the light there. Make a real difference eventually. The community will start noticing. They'll start saying, you know, we've been trying to tackle that for a long time, and now you've come along and you've done it. Why have you done it? Because God has put something in your heart. You've worked it through. You've committed yourself to it. And supernatural energy has come into that word through you. We had a couple join us a couple of months ago, Beth and Troy. And they came from Afghanistan. He's been working near the border of Iran in Afghanistan, and they've come back here to continue with the same work, but more in administration now for various reasons. And he contacted me before he arrived. We had some email conversations because he's really interested in Afghans who speak Dari. It's a bit like the Farsi language. That's the language he speaks. And every week I talk to him about something in relation to this. And he was asking me, how many Afghans are there in Croydon? Anyway, things have begun to transpire now. He's just spoke to me at the door, and he was at a meeting last night with Mahin. Mahin's an Iranian person. A meeting at their home, there were Iranian people there, and they brought along a number of Afghans, so they're able to share with them. We did some work a little while ago with the Harvest, and the Harvest was to go to the refugee centre. And Pam took it on herself to take it to the refugee centre in Croydon. And so she invited Troy to go with her. And when he went there, he discovered that there are lots of Afghan boys who have come into Croydon. Not their parents, but the boys have come in. Made a link with them so that we can begin to do a work with them. This is good. It's good. Where's it coming from? It's coming from a man and his wife who are carrying a burden to reach Afghan people in this country through friendships, trying to meet their needs, trying to listen, and eventually to speak about the Lord Jesus. What he said about this Afghan chap last night, he talked about it in terms of him being the peacemaker. He said he's not a Christian. He said, but sometimes you need a link into the community. That converts him, he says, I'm just fed up with Islam. It's not going anywhere. So he's the beginning of a movement there. There are people here, and you begin to hear something from God. Sometimes it's just too heavy. It's too heavy. And you say, I can't do that. I've experienced that one over the years. And sometimes he just makes it load, he loads it on even more, and he said, look, you're going to be faithful to me. And I say, yes, I'm going to be faithful to you. I know this is heavy. But if it's something he puts in your heart to do, he will give you energy to do it. And sometimes you need to do it on your own, and then you might get two or three people and they do it with you. But it's beginning to find ways into dark areas, difficult areas, that become easier areas when Jesus starts to touch them. Through you. We do a lot as a church. We do these things together and we organise events for the church. We'll continue to do that. We have our services together. But God wants us more to be spreading out into different places so that all the energy that God has put in you can be reaching those individuals or small groups. Personal involvement. And then for individuals, he says four other things here. Is it not to share your food with the hungry? Well, the meaning's obvious. And to provide the poor wanderer with shelter. That literally means bring home or bring indoors and refers to the opening of the home. That might be the domestic home or it might be a home that can be created. A home that we hire somewhere else or a hall that we own where people can find shelter. When you see the naked, to clothe him. It speaks of immediate response to need. When you see, then respond to that. And not to turn away from your own flesh and blood. Isaiah shines a light on the responsibility that we have to our own families. In my own readings this morning, I was in 1 Timothy 5. And this is just reinforced this morning when I was reading this. If anyone does not provide for his relatives, and especially for his immediate family, he is denied the faith and is worse than an unbeliever. Occasionally I find some people who have a real social conscience, but neglectful of their family. It's as though the busyness of being involved in prison ministry or whatever it might be is exciting them, but they're not caring for their wife and they're not caring for the kids. Those things always need to go hand in hand. So some stories here. There are churches up and down our country now who are caring for the homeless in really good ways. Where we came from in Nottingham, a tremendous program from the Vineyard there. It's the largest vineyard in the country. A vineyard is a church, if you don't know what I'm talking about. It's a church stream. And they're doing a tremendous work right across the heart of Nottingham. A thrilling work is happening in our church at the moment with John Broom and others of you who are going on a Thursday evening to get involved, just listening and being with people who are in hostels. They're homeless, most of them in hostels now. It's been just a pleasure and a joy to see the enthusiasm brought to that. And for me to have the opportunity to meet some of those homeless people when they came to our Alpha course. Great. Just a handful of people giving up your Thursday evenings to go and be with people who are homeless. Making friends with them. When we were in Guildford, we always used to start giving our blankets at church round about September and October. And there were a little team that used to go right into the heart of London to take those blankets to homeless people. Because there was always need for blankets. They often got very wet, you know, when there was bad weather around and they wanted them to be renewed. What we're trying to say in all of this is that there are societal needs and there are individual needs. Don't tire of hearing our purpose statement that Purley Baptist Church is committed to bringing God's blessing to the communities in where we live. If you're somebody who wants to have private religion and personal blessing and just lots of blessing in our church, then you've joined the wrong church. We want that. But we're constantly wanting to get beyond these four walls. Most of the time we're outside these four walls, so that's where most of the ministry needs to be happening. Finding ways to bring blessing to people who aren't yet Christians. Finding ways to make these communities more full of light and truth and justice. That's why we're here. Plenty of personal blessing. I love being blessed by God. I love being in relationship with Him. I love being in prayer meetings. I love having fellowship. I love all those things. But all those things are to impact our spirits so that we have huge blessing beyond our church buildings and our Christian relationships. That's why we've been saved. Saved first of all for Him, but then saved to do things for Him. Anybody with me this morning? It'd be good if you are. Now, what I find really staggering about the Isaiah 58 passage are the incredible promises that God says, if you will involve yourselves in these ways, then this is what I will do. And so at the end of this first section, he gives a whole list, and then he says a bit more, and then he gives an even longer list of what he will do. God will never shortchange any of us. If any of you can come to me and say, you know, I just feel really shortchanged by God, well, I'll need to listen for a little while just to see what you're saying. But we're never shortchanged by God. You know, just knowing Him's enough, but then just doing things for Him and finding individual blessing, there's just so much that comes down from heaven into our hearts. Let's just see what He says He will do. Let's read this little section together. Together. Then your lights will break forth like the dawn, and your healing will quickly appear. Then your righteousness will go before you, and the glory of the Lord will be your rear guard. Then you will call, and the Lord will answer. You will cry for help, and He will say, here I am. There are five things there that just come out. Light, healing, righteousness, glory of God, and answered prayer. Just in closing, I'm just going to say a brief word about each of those. Hardly anything at all, actually, just to lift out the real meaning of them. Light will break forth, literally will erupt like flood waters. We witness those flood waters in the news when there's been excessive rain, and places that have known a lot of peacefulness for a long time suddenly find that there's been 4 feet of water coming down the main high street and cars thrown all over the place. That's the power of erupting water. Well, likewise, this light that will come from heaven will have that sort of effect upon us. And the healing means new flesh growing over a wound and personal restoration. When I was preparing this morning, I was remembering that I'd cut myself on my hand a couple of weeks ago. And I just wanted to check what had happened. And of course, I was trying to find it. And of course, there's new flesh there now. In fact, I can't remember which hand it was, because there's new flesh there. It's completely restored. And when God talks about healing, that's what He means. He means a perfect restoration to what something was before. That if you're busy yourself and be involved, we've only got so many hours in the day, we can't do everything, but we do have some energy and we have some time. And we know the Lord, and He puts things on our hearts, and so we do those things. And when we do those things, it says, I will do these things. I will give you a perfect restoration. And then the security of righteousness going before us, and glory behind us. Or putting this more personally, when we have Jesus' righteousness as our blessed breastplate, and the glorious presence of God surrounding us. And then the one that I think is my favourite of all of these. It's been terrific until now, but I think this one's my favourite. I think because I'm so into prayer. And I love the fact that God answers prayer. The final one's about answered prayer. What does He say? You shall call, and the Lord himself will answer. I'm not going to send an angel to give us a message. The Lord himself will answer. You shall cry for help, and at once he will say, here I am. It's as though the Lord is ready to serve us by saying, here I am, and behold me. I'm nearly finished. See, what the Lord wants is he wants to live amongst us. That's what he wants. That's what he wants to do. He wants to live here. But he's got a problem because we grieve him and we don't do the things always that are on his heart. We do our own things. But when we sort of connect with what's in God's heart, the people of God connecting with what's in God's heart, he just can't help remaining. He's just thinking, this is great. I'm just going to be with you. I'm not going anywhere else. And when that happens, you see, he answers all our prayers because he's there. He's saying, look, I'm here. What is it you want me to do? I'll do it for you. Perhaps our church was wrong years ago to choose Isaiah 58 as an important text for us. They went Isaiah 58, 12, which is about restoring the ruined cities and that sort of thing. But you can't just take verse 12. You've got to take the whole lot. That's to do it justice. And please don't make this heavy. If I'm making it heavy, I'm sorry. Let's see this as a glorious privilege to be with him and into his things. Yeah. Well, let's close our eyes then for a little while. And we're going to sing a couple of songs in closing. This first song is about the healing of the nation. And after we've sung it, perhaps Peter just continue to play that little bit, that tune for a little while, and we'll just have just numbers of us just speaking out the prayers for the nation in the way that you want to do it. I don't just mean one prayer and listen to that person. I mean as many of us as possible to do that together.